You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There's a critical shortage of legal services for immigrants throughout the United States, and that vacuum has allowed illegal immigration consultants to thrive. In Hispanic communities, they're known as notarios. They can scam unknowing customers out of thousands of dollars and even make their clients more vulnerable to deportation. Joining me now to fill in the details are Samuel Palmer Simon, the Legal Initiatives Coordinator at the New York Immigration Coalition, and BuzzFeed News reporter David Noriega, who investigated the world of notarios for his story, The Immigrant Leader Accused of Fooling Immigrants, the Media, and Daddy Yankee. Sam and David, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Sam, what does the word notario mean in Spanish-speaking communities?
So a literal translation would just be notary public. However, it does have a connotation in the specifically in the Spanish-speaking community of meaning something a little bit more, in the sense that in most Latin American countries, somebody who is a notario is essentially qualified to practice law. So they've gone through some much more schooling than somebody here.
Do people who advertise themselves as notarios in this country hold the title back home?
Possibly, but not necessarily. The majority here are simply notary publics in the fashion that we know them to be here.
What do you need to do to provide immigration advice legally?
So to be able to provide actual advice, which can be a sort of a vague grayish area in some respects, you have to either be an attorney, so barred in any state, doesn't matter where, because immigration law is federal. And the other sort of school of people or camp of people are those who are BIA accredited, so those who are recognized by the immigration courts to be able to practice.
But I'd assume that if I were in need of having help in filling out immigration paperwork or finding out how the process works, mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily go to a lawyer because I would think the lawyer would be too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So would I seek out a notario instead? Would the notario be offering services at a lot less?
They certainly do offer them at a much lower rate. Fortunately, in New York City, we do have a large amount of free legal services, low-cost legal services. In addition, the only thing that a notario should be able to do for you really is give you basic information. So what form would I fill out if I qualify for X thing? And then they could tell you that form and perhaps do some translation, help you get documents together, things of that nature.
David, how did you hear about Oswaldo Cabrera, the man you profile in your story?
Mm-hmm. I heard about him because he's being sued in Los Angeles. I heard about him from a couple of lawyers, a man named Clemente Franco and a guy named Daniel Sharp. They knew about him just because Cabrera has been present in the sort of immigrant activist scene for a long time, for almost two decades. So he was always a very public figure if you were in the right places. He shows up in newspapers and on television constantly. And
he advertises himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is rare for notarios?
No, it's not rare. You can actually find ads for notarios. Usually the places where you find them are Spanish language specific media. So it's not necessarily visible to your average Anglo person in New York City, but if you pick up a copy of El Diario or any of the other sort of Spanish papers or watch, you know, any local or national Spanish channel, you can sometimes see them. What's interesting about what he did is that he never actually advertised himself as a notario, even though that is functionally what he was doing. He was an activist, and that just unpacks a whole complicated set of implications.
Because as an activist, people might trust him more?
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, legitimate legal services providers are always exhorting immigrants to seek out nonprofits and, you know, people who have reputations in the community as people who help others. And that's specifically a way of getting people to avoid these kind of fly-by-night operations. And the fact that somebody could allegedly, you know, successfully pose as someone like that while actually ripping people off really is that's what's especially insidious about it.
Why did he announce in 2010 that he would go on a hunger strike?
It was an activist campaign.
For what?
So 2010 was a very sort of special and heated moment in immigration activism, right? The Arizona Show Me Your Papers law, as it was known, had just passed. So there was all of this fervor surrounding immigrant rights all around the country. It's sort of quaint when you think about it now, but people really believed that comprehensive immigration reform was possible at the time. So there was a lot of activism, and you know, there were actually other people going on hunger strike at the time in New York who were part of legitimate activist organizations, and he just kind of jumped on that bandwagon.
And he was operating in New York at the time. We'll get to how he's traveled around. But Sam, in what neighborhoods in New York can I find these notarios? I'm assuming the neighborhoods where there are large Hispanic populations, but is that pretty much it?
Well, there's certainly a large amount of them, you know, sort of stretched along various parts of Queens, you know, Roosevelt Avenue and other parts of Queens tend to be hotbeds.
With an office that would say notario on the outside?
You know, they might offer that service as well as a bundle of other services. For example, we call them multi-service agencies. You know, they tend to be travel agents, real estate agents, tax preparers, things of that nature. And it will often just say, you know, immigration in a small corner of their window.
Do they tend to come from certain countries in Latin America?
You know, I haven't seen a specific trend from certain countries, no.
I don't think so. No, they come from all over. And sometimes you see this thing happen where, you know, people from Ecuador will receive clients from Ecuador. People from Mexico will receive clients from Mexico. It's part of this concept of affinity fraud where people draw others with their same background, come from their same country, and sort of create a sense of comfort based on that.
And where did Cabrera come from?
He's from Ecuador, but he most of his clients were actually from Central America, from El Salvador, Honduras. So he stretched beyond that.
And he was here for many years. Where was he located?
He was actually living and working off of Roosevelt Avenue in Queens, the sort of Jackson Heights, Corona area, which is this really colorful, dense hodgepodge of immigrants and their businesses.
What kinds of promises did he make to his clients?
So allegedly he would promise in various ways that he would make people legal, that he would resolve their immigration status.
Can anybody do that except the government?
Well, the government is the only – right. Only the government can do that. And only certain people, as Sam explained, can help anybody get the government to do that. And in most cases – if somebody entered the country illegally, they really have no recourse. I mean, Sam would be better equipped to talk about this, but it's not something that most people can do.
Sam, is this what a lot of notarios offer, that they can pull those strings?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a varying degree of sort of options that are offered and varying degrees of fraud that are committed in communities. You know, one can be as blatant as, you know, I know somebody who works for USCIS, the agency that's involved with adjudicating applications, and saying, I can pull some strings, I can get something moved faster. You know, you don't even have to show up to your interview. I'm going to make everything work out okay. To the more sort of nebulous, I'm going to apply for something, maybe that person's actually not eligible for that thing. To, you know, sort of not applying for anything at all, taking somebody's money and not doing anything.
My guests are Samuel Palmer Simon, Legal Initiatives Coordinator at the New York Immigration Coalition, and David Noriega, who is a news reporter at BuzzFeed. What were most of Cabrera's clients very poor? I assume they would be.
Oh, yeah.
How much did he charge them?
It varied, but usually it was – it would add up to somewhere in the range of, you know, $2,500 to $7,000.
It's a lot of money for somebody who's living on less than a minimum wage in many cases.
Yeah,
when you asked him about the high rates, what was his reply?
Well, his claim consistently to me was that he never charged people for any of his services and that all of the money that he ever received was voluntarily donated.
Voluntarily donated.
Which was part of this.
Because
whole,
he's an activist.
Right, exactly. It was part of the profile that he had built as this sort of community leader, advocate type of person. You know, I don't necessarily have to go into detail, but there's a lot of evidence to contradict that claim. Everything from receipts that people, you know, copied and gave their lawyers and gave me to just the sheer number of people who say that he was specifically charging them for services. Oh, not only that, but a record that he himself filed through his attorney in open court, essentially admitting to the fact that he was contracting with people to provide these services.
Although he had registered as a nonprofit.
Only briefly before the nonprofit was suspended by the tax board. So not even really that. He was really operating on the margins in pretty much every way possible.
Is he typical? Or he just seems to be more colorful, a special case?
He's a little bit of an outlier in the sense that I think most notarios are – they don't seek these public profiles in the way that he did, right? I mean, Cabrera was on Sábado Gigante, which is this really delightful variety show that's been on Univision for decades and is – I don't really know the statistics, but it might very well be the most watched television program by Hispanic audiences. So he was really shooting for the stars as far as how many people could see him. But there is, I mean, he's definitely not the only one who sort of dons the activist mantle in order to do this kind of thing. I've heard of other examples.
When and why did he leave New York?
It depends on who you ask. His version is that he sort of hopped from coast to coast and traveled a lot just because he was sort of proselytizing in all of these places and was building a base for his grand mission of essentially reinvigorating American democracy. Other people will tell you that he would arrive in a place, start gathering clients. Once people started getting hip to the fact that he was not doing what he promised, allegedly, they would essentially drive him out of town.
And then he landed in Los Angeles?
He spent a long time in Los Angeles first, came to New York for a while, was sort of shuttling between New York and D.C., and then went back to L.A., which is where he is now again.
Sam, have you had clients who were scammed by notarios?
Certainly. Far too many to count.
How do they describe the experience of working with them?
So sort of as David mentioned, these are trusted individuals in their community. Often it's sort of through word of mouth that they hear about them. My cousin went to see this person and they were able to get their status. They were able to get their documents in order in some fashion. And so it's through these sort of anecdotal stories that are passed through that they come into contact with this person oftentimes. And they believe it until things go horribly wrong.
Can't working with a notario sometimes put an immigrant in danger of being deported?
Certainly, yes.
How does that happen?
I mean, it can happen in so many ways. Somebody can file an application that they should not be filing, so filing for something that they're not eligible for, which causes sort of the fraud bells to go off with the government, which in turn requires an investigation, ending them up in immigration deportation. It can be as easy as filing a claim that's particularly weak. So there's certain types of applications that when they're denied, asylum, for example, which is, a common thing that's sort of easy to fabricate. The stories tend to, parallel one another in a lot of ways. A denial of an asylum application equals automatic referral for that person to deportation proceedings.
My guests are Samuel Palmer-Simon, the Legal Initiatives Coordinator of the New York Immigration Coalition, and BuzzFeed News reporter David Noriega, who's written a story about the notarios called The Immigrant Leader Accused of Fooling Immigrants, the Media, and Daddy Yankee. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with BuzzFeed News reporter David Noriega, who has written a story called The Immigrant Leader Accused of Fooling Immigrants, the Media, and Daddy Yankee, and attorney Samuel Palmer-Simon, the Legal Initiatives Coordinator at the New York Immigration Coalition. And we invite your calls if you have had experiences along these lines. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook and Twitter. And before we go any further, I thought I would take a call from Barbara from Norwood, New Jersey. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Well, hello. How are you?
We are well. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I used to practice immigration law. Right now I'm practicing motherhood. And I was in New York City. I practiced in New York under a another attorney. I wasn't on my own. I practiced for another attorney. And she would charge $10,000 per visa. And people would come into her waiting room. She'd have a 4 o'clock, a 5 o'clock, and a 6 o'clock appointment. Invariably, she'd be an hour or two behind. And they would sit there, and they would wait, and they would pay the $10,000, and they would get the they would hire her, and she would eventually get the visa.
But she was successful, Barbara?
Oh, she was incredibly successful. She'd actually been featured in the New York Times many years ago, maybe back in the 60s, as being groundbreaking because she was a woman. Back then, it was a man's field, the practice of law. But what I would do, my job was to go over to the federal building and get the visa. So where somebody's paying $10,000 for a visa, I'm going over there for one. And I would sit there, make application, I would sit there, and I would wait until it was issued, however many hours that took. Now, while I was there one time, then this fellow befriended me, et cetera, and he was telling me how he'd go in with 25, 50, 100 applications, and he would work on the percentages, sort of like the collection agencies. So whatever he ended up with, and people would pay, well, whatever they pay, $600, $300, whatever, for him to make the application. But then the ones who bounced, if theirs got bounced, then they'd eventually go make it to an immigration lawyer, and they, you know, have to pay a couple thousand to maybe $5,000, depending on the complexity of what they were seeking. And we do a FOIA request right then, because at that point they've already been, they've made appearance, and they could say things that would affect in the application they made that might affect down the road how their applications would go from that point. And immigration law, I'm sure your guests have said, is really a civil it's a civil area of law. It's an administrative area of law. Yet the people involved are treated like criminals, and that's a dichotomy. Now, while I was sitting there the one day, this fellow was educating me. In came another gentleman, and he went right up to the counter, right up to the front of the line. He was smiling, laughing. And the guy said to me, see that guy right there? He bribes the people. He bribes the people who are behind the counter in the back. He said, and every once in a while, somebody will get wind of it, and they'll clean out the whole people. Because the people who are working in the back, they're typically high school educated, and they're making decisions over people's lives with just that sort of you know, not an opportunity to advance much further than the little clerk position that they had right there.
Now, Sam, does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah, certainly. There are people who I think are on the take, so to speak. I don't think it's certainly the average employee of the federal government by any means.
But she's talking about bribery here.
Right. I think that I've certainly heard stories. You know, I've never witnessed anything firsthand. And I've certainly heard very anecdotally from clients that they, you know somebody who received a benefit that they really should not have received under the law.
When someone is in this country illegally, what are their options if they want to remain?
So, I mean, sort of the large classifications, you know, immigration law is an extremely complex field. They say it's sort of second in complexity after tax law. Hopefully a little bit more exciting. But, the sort of broad categories of people who are granted admission to the United States permanently or temporarily are, you know, those with specific job skills, those who have connections to a family member here in the United States, those who have some sort of humanitarian claim to being here.
But that doesn't seem to be enough in many cases, any of those.
Well, certainly not. I mean,
so who determines whether your humanitarian claim is more serious than the next person's, or whether you're having a relative here is enough to warrant your staying?
Right. So, I mean, as we've seen sort of the history of immigration laws unfold in this country, you know, certain categories have been broadened and narrowed. You know, there was a time when certain nationalities, your country of origin determined whether you could immigrate to the United States or not. And now we have this system of, you know, family-based and employment-based. As to sort of who's making these calls, you know, as our caller mentioned, it is a very administrative task. So, you know, you have a lot of officers who are not necessarily attorneys, kind of making the ground floor decisions. And then, you know, immigration judges, they have to make these horrible assessments of, you know, was this person essentially tortured enough?
David, when you spoke to people who had been scammed by Cabrera, did they say they'd believed originally that they had to go through a notario to become a citizen?
I think it's not that they believed that they had to. It's just that I think they weren't necessarily fully aware of what the options were that were available to them and what the risks were, right? I mean, it's hard to access unless you talk to the people, but it's a really profoundly emotional process. You have people who are trying to fix something that is just sort of inalterably and very fundamentally wrong with their lives, and it triggers every aspect of what makes a person's life good or bad, and they're really desperate to resolve these issues.
One of the people you wrote about was Luis Enrique Flores, who was a client of Cabrera's. How did he get involved with Cabrera, and did Cabrera promise that he would help him become a citizen?
I actually will not answer that concretely because I don't remember exactly which promises Flores alleges Cabrera made, but I do know that he, you know, he did promise to sort of fix his case, right? To get him some kind of permanent legal status, be it a green card or citizenship. But the way that he... It's actually interesting the way that they first connected. One thing that does set Cabrera apart a little bit from the average notario is that he claimed to specialize in getting people out of immigration custody, right? Which is especially difficult and not, it's not something that people claim to be able to do because very few people can actually do it. It's not that Cabrera was able to do it. It's more like he was able to
claim it.
Exactly.
Right. He also billed himself as a defender of immigrant children.
Yeah, that was his sort of hobby horse. He actually wrote this book, this self-published book, called, what is it? American Children Orphaned by La Migra. La Migra being immigration authorities. And the idea is, you know, the kids who, American-born children of undocumented parents who are deported.
Sam, how can a lawyer get you out of immigration custody?
So I'm guessing that we're talking here about sort of immigration detention?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. So for some people, there's simply not an option. You know, one of the changes in the laws not too long ago, in the late 90s, was that certain groups of people, based on their criminal convictions or sort of standing with immigration, are mandatorily detained. And so an attorney can ask for a special kind of hearing to determine whether they are indeed classified as somebody who should be mandatorily detained. But generally, sort of the way that one argues that they should be let out on bond, which is the only option for most folks, is to sort of throw a barrage of humanitarian sort of claims at the court. You know, this person has family members here, they have a longstanding job, they're esteemed in their community, et cetera.
But does that work?
Yeah, it does. You know, oftentimes you're really only talking about lowering a bond from $20,000 to $15,000. You know, it's certainly something.
My guest is Samuel Palmer-Simon, the Legal Initiatives Coordinator at the New York Immigration Coalition, and BuzzFeed News reporter David Noriega, who's written an article about notarios called The Immigrant Leader Accused of Fooling Immigrants, the Media, and Daddy Yankee. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Most of the people we're talking about, the immigrants, don't speak English very well. I'm assuming they go to notarios partly because they can speak in Spanish. But what happens if they don't want to do that? Where can they get real concrete information on the immigration process?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always sort of first think of the government as a great resource.
Do they have Spanish language?
They do. USCIS, websites? Which is sort of, you know, the service-oriented component of Department of Homeland Security, which deals with immigration, you know, they tend to have a lot of information. They even have pamphlets on how to avoid notario fraud. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, one of their pet projects, and they're pretty good about dealing with that issue. But, you know, then that's the clearinghouse for a lot of information, a lot of the forms. And then apart from that, here in New York, at least, we have something called the Office for New Americans, which runs a hotline so people can call. It's run through Catholic Charities. They speak, you know, all the languages, essentially.
A listener sends in information. She says that there's a link, uscis.gov/avoid-scams.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
If I were not an English speaker, I might have trouble navigating that.
Right. I mean, I think that when you're talking about immigrant enclaves, there's no real amount of sort of public noise that you can make that will correct this problem, right? Because, I mean, the issue is that these communities live lives that are fairly isolated, not just by language, but by any number of sort of material factors, right? So the question of whether an immigrant, what will lead an immigrant to go onto a computer and open a browser window and type in uscis.gov/avoid-scams is, it's not an entirely plausible scenario, right? One thing that I also just quickly want to add is that this is by no means something that's limited to Latino communities, right?
I was going to ask about that. What's happening with Asians? What's happening with people from Africa?
Right. There's someone once told me, someone who works a lot with this issue told me that in the Chinese immigrant communities, for example, they sort of jokingly use the word chintario, which is like notario, but for Chinese people. You know, African communities, every manner of Asian community, they all have these sort of shadowy intermediaries that focus on their people.
Yeah. In 2014, just last year, Governor Cuomo signed legislation, the Immigrant Assistance Service Enforcement Act, that made immigration assistance fraud a felony. Has that legislation had an impact on the Hispanic communities or the immigrant communities in New York?
Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of yet to be determined. It was only recently actually gone into action. But I think it does create some barriers to notario practice and unauthorized practice of law that, that hopefully will be enforced. I think that's really the linchpin there.
On the other hand, immigrants, many are feeling kind of betrayed by what happened on Tuesday after Republican and Democratic leaders couldn't agree on a proposal that linked immigration reform with an education tax credit in the governor's proposed budget. The governor said that both would be dropped as negotiations continued.
Yeah, we're pretty disheartened, though we certainly have some hope that the DREAM Act is not forsaken in New York State. It's certainly been a long, hard-fought struggle here.
David, when you spoke to immigrants, what was their response to President Obama's immigration policy?
Oh, it varies wildly from immigrant to immigrant, honestly. Everything from, anybody who qualifies or thinks they might qualify are generally very excited about it. But there's also a lot of confusion, a lot of questions. And there's also this interesting dimension, I think, where a lot of people have not necessarily resigned to themselves, but grown accustomed to living in the United States as undocumented people. And so they're, I don't want to say cynical, but they don't necessarily believe what they hear, and they're not inclined to think that, you know, some dictum from the president is going to solve all of their problems.
Have recent changes to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the DACA policy, affected the world of notarios?
Well, yeah. I mean, the main way they've done that is it's the announcements have created a lot of opportunity for notarios to exploit the confusion that they created in order to tell people that you know, you hear a lot of reports of notarios and notario type people saying, you know, if you give me $500 now, I can get you to the front of the line for DAPA when it doesn't even exist yet. And it just amplifies the need for services and the possibility for exploitation.
Yeah. Why have people sued Cabrero? What are the lawsuits about?
Fraud. it's really that simple. I mean, there are California, like New York, has specific laws tailored to immigration fraud. So, you know, those are some of the counts, but also just plain fraud, just misrepresentation and stealing people's money.
I'm assuming, again, that this applies to immigrants from all over the world, but it wouldn't apply to European immigrants. I just recently received an email where somebody asked, why is it that when white people go to another country, they're called expats, and when people of color go to another country, they're called illegal immigrants?
Well, I think that certainly has to do with the sort of this the debate and the rhetoric used in this country specifically around that issue. And, you know, we've fought back really hard for that term illegal immigrant to kind of be eradicated, at least from like the public discourse.
Isabel on Twitter has written in, New York City's resources are exceptional. The Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs is a great resource. Do you agree?
I do. We partner with them on many initiatives. I wonder whether Isabel works there. but yes, they're a great resource. You know, they are, I know, standing up a lot of large-scale efforts around administrative relief, so around these new options that we're seeing. You know, they work with us, the coalition, on a lot of this anti-fraud work as well. So they are a great resource.
Yeah.
And we're fortunate.
I definitely wouldn't disagree. I mean, I think the only thing that I would say is that these problems tend to be a lot more sprawling and complex than any individual government agency can address, right? And I mean, one thing that I always like to say is that when it comes specifically to immigration fraud, it's not so simple as, you know, lawyers good, notarios bad, right? There are lawyers out there who scam people too. And even though they're barred and they have, you know, their diplomas hanging on the wall, they misrepresent what they can do and they falsely charge people money. And it's also not just immigration. There are any number of transactions that an undocumented immigrant has to go through in the course of daily life for which there are people who will scam them.
And so is Cabrera's legal – are his legal problems not typical? Is he a unique case here? And is it likely that he will go to prison or at least be fined heavily?
Oh, I don't – I certainly don't want to predict anything that will happen to him. I mean, I know he seems to be under investigation by authorities in Los Angeles. So, you know, we'll see.
My thanks to both of you for being on our show today. I've been speaking with BuzzFeed News reporter David Noriega, who investigated the world of notarios for his story, The Immigrant Leader Accused of Fooling Immigrants, the Media, and Daddy Yankee, and with Samuel Palmer Simon, the Legal Initiatives Coordinator at the New York Immigration Coalition. It's been a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you.